Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
All right, so Seth, by the time you're back, July 15th will have come and gone. It was an important date for Texan fans last year because that was when they had Clowney on the franchise tag. So we know full well July 15th is an important deadline. For those who don't know, that is when franchise-tagged players must sign a long-term deal. Otherwise, they can't sign a long-term deal until after the season is over. So it has a lot of ramifications. Not only for a player like Dak Prescott, does his long-term contract become a talking point throughout the year and a big question, especially if it is he has an up-and-down kind of season. But it also becomes something that if teams are trying to move a player, and I think, you know, like a guy like Matthew Judon, or Yannick Ngakoue is a better example, because we know the Jags are a team that's probably trying to get as much draft capital as possible, and they don't seem to be able to agree on a number with Ngakoue. Ngakoue's value is going to inherently go down once July 15th comes and goes, because whoever trades for him can't sign him to a long-term deal until after the season is over. So July 15th is very, very important. Seth, of all these guys, there are 14 players that are franchise tagged. There's one who's a transition tag, which is kind of interesting because it's Kenyon Drake, who's the guy that essentially made David Johnson expendable, who, you know, he's now a Houston Texan. So it'll be interesting to see if Kenyon Drake gets a big deal from Arizona, who's been burned by a big deal before that they gave David Johnson. But I think Dak Prescott is probably the headliner on this list. He's the only quarterback.
Oh, yeah, Dak Prescott. What were you asking me, though? The guy that what?
Well, just I guess I wanted to roll through a few of these here and see what you think the chances are they get a long-term deal or these guys that are going to get moved. What are we talking about?
Well, yeah, no, you had asked who jumps out at me. And yeah. I guess the guy that honestly might surprise you is who jumped out at me was Hunter Henry, just because I think the fact that he got franchise tagged was a little bit of a surprise to some people. But I feel like he's in some ways a bit like Will Fuller, where you're not quite sure what he is because of injuries, and you feel like you haven't really that he hasn't reached his potential. So the team gets to the point where you almost wonder if the team is hoping that they just decide to play on the franchise tag, even though it's kind of a cap hit. That's how I would feel about Will Fuller right now. Like if Will Fuller gets a free agency next year, I'm kind of fine paying a premium just to kick the can down the road and see what's Will Fuller like if he's completely healthy. Has it been like, let's say Will Fuller stays healthy this year.
Yeah.
If he plays 16 games this year, I'm still not 100% sure I feel comfortable with his health, you know?
Right.
So I might want to just franchise tag him and wait one more year. And then all of a sudden you got 2 years of health underneath you.
That's a really good point. Now, that would be – the reason I haven't let my mind go there is that would be the ultimate problem to have with Will Fuller, right? Like, oh, my God, what do we do? He played 15 games this year. That would be a great problem to have with Will Fuller, because I just assumed – and maybe this is McClain's thinking influencing me a little bit, which is, you know, I think McClain said, if Will Fuller's banged up again, then the Texans will let him walk. If he's healthy all season long, then he's going to become too expensive for them to want to keep, because I think – my sense is that O'Brien is not going to be into paying the freight for what a fully healthy Will Fuller would command. Because there will be a team, there's 32 of them in the league, not sure if you know this, so there will be one at least that will fool itself into thinking that a healthy Will Fuller this season is the norm, not the exception.
Right. Well, that's the hard thing because that does happen. Yeah. I mean, some guys just have bad luck. Will Fuller was healthy in college. As you've pointed out,
played every game,
and he's had a really bad stretch here. Sometimes that happens. You know, the most famous example is Frank Gore, who tore. Think of this: Frank Gore, one of the longest tenured running backs in NFL history, a guy that just shows no signs of wanting to let up. His body might be finally starting to slow down. But Frank Gore tore both of his ACLs in early in his football career.
Yeah.
And with a running back especially, you'd be tempted to think like, well, this guy's just injury prone. And a running back? Nah, no way. So I guess Fuller staying healthy for one full season, I think a lot of people might look at that and say, all right, maybe it was genuinely bad luck. We'll try to figure out a way to protect ourselves and not give him the best contract on earth, but we think he's worth the risk and that he's got, in some respects, maybe he's got the bad luck out of the way.
As far as these guys who are franchise tags, Seth, you know, the franchise tag, to the letter of the law, the franchise tag is meant to be a sort of a placeholder to continue good faith negotiations towards a deal. We know what it's become. It's for some guys, it's become a way for the team to maintain possession of that player until they're able to flip him in some sort of trade. Or for some guys, it's become just, hey, I'd rather pay this guy for 1 year and then wait and see and not negotiate at all with them right now. I look at the list of these guys, and I don't know that I can find a single one where I feel like, especially of the prominent ones, you know, like I'm not sure about Brandon Scherff in Washington. He's a guard, no idea. Of the guys who are the big names, the big ticket ones, I don't know that I can find a single one where I feel like, oh yeah, they're going to get a long-term deal done, or that the team even feels motivated to get a long-term deal done.
It used to be, okay, the concept with franchise tag was like, oh, that's your franchise player.
Yeah.
That's your Peyton Manning. Go back to when the franchise tag was instituted 25 years ago or so.
93.
And it was 1993, yep. So it was like, hey, that's your Drew Bledsoe.
Yeah.
But, you know, honestly, it was your – who would have been in 93?
It was Steve Young was the first quarterback to ever get hit with the franchise tag.
There you go. Jim Kelly, somebody like that. Guys that you're genuine franchise players. Where now, the guys that are your genuine franchise players, you tend to take care of them long before it gets to the point of them getting the franchise tag.
Right.
And if they don't, then it gets to be a big deal, which is why it does make you wonder, okay, what do the Cowboys really think of Dak Prescott?
Mm-hmm.
I know we have the stories of what's been offered to him. I always take those with a grain of salt. You don't know what the structure was or whether they genuinely were good deals. Maybe Dallas is kind of comfortable having Dak Prescott around for one more year, and let's see if we figure out a little bit more what Dak Prescott really is.
The pandemic is going to hurt these guys getting long-term deals too, because I don't think teams already know what these guys are going to be in terms of the 2020 season on the cap. They're all already accounted for. Even the ones that haven't signed their tender, like Shaq Barrett, or Prescott signed his, but like Shaquille Barrett and A.J. Green and Ngakoue, that they still count against the cap right now. With the uncertainty of what's going to happen with the cap next year, I think it almost eliminates the chances of any of these guys getting a long-term deal.
Well, but also, okay, maybe, I don't know if it'll, I think some of these guys will get long-term deals. I think, though, that from a strategy standpoint, if you're the player, there's always the danger you're going to get franchise tag 2 years in a row, which is still a pretty good chunk of money for most of these positions, 2 years in a row, but you don't get that long-term money. So usually in a typical circumstance, you've got a danger of being franchise tagged again the next year for slightly more money. The problem is next year, the cap is probably going to go down some. And all of a sudden, you getting franchise tagged again at a higher cap figure, that might be prohibitive for some of those teams to where there's more pressure on them to either do the long-term deal or to just let you go and be a free agent next year.
That's a good point, because the franchise tag is not – that's not money you can spread out over multiple years. That's not funny money. That's real, all-hit-in-one-year dollars. So that – you're right. That could – the second franchise tag – I don't know how many of these guys are worthy of a second franchise tag, but Dak Prescott is absolutely – that conversation's been had already. I just look at some of the bigger names on this list, Seth, like – I look at the what's the motivation for the team to give these guys a long-term deal? We talked about Dak, but Matthew Judon, he might be a one-hit wonder who's more a product of the scheme in Baltimore. Hunter Henry, I thought you did a good job of laying out. He's been injured a lot. Derrick Henry's a running back. It has not been a great thing to pay running backs big money, and Derrick Henry's a guy who's had a lot of, over the last 12 months, he's carried the football a ton. Shaq Barrett, again, another guy who just had one big year in Tampa all of a sudden with double-digit sacks. He'd never been that guy. A.J. Green, older guy, banged up a lot. Ngakoue, you know, he's having his deal with the Jags right now. They're sort of staring at each other. And the Chiefs with Chris Jones, my guess is they'd love to sign Chris Jones, but the Chiefs have like $18 worth of cap space right now.
Plus, Chris Jones is claiming that he's not going to play at all unless he's making $20 million this year.
Right.
I think Chris Jones is in a much better position than Jadeveon Clowney was, perhaps, to get a good contract somewhere else. And I highly doubt that Chris Jones sits out this entire year. He's not under contract, so he wouldn't get fined at all. He can do it, but he's missing out on a whole lot of money to just potentially get franchise tagged again next year. I think he might be pretty interesting to a few different teams out there.
There's a video out of Chris Jones. There's a video out of the folks at NFL Total Access, that Mike Garofalo is part of that, that they're talking about Chris Jones in one of the features, right? They're having sort of this three-way conversation about franchise tag guys, and they're talking about Chris Jones, and the tweet says, we're answering the question of which guy deserves to get a contract extension. Garofalo says, I went with Chris Jones, though with the team not making an offer of $20 million per season or more, I don't think he bites before the deadline to do a deal. And then Chris Jones replies to it with, or I won't play, at Le'Veon Bell told me about this.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I'm thinking to myself, dude, I don't know. I mean, I know Le'Veon Bell makes a lot of money, but I don't think that worked out for Le'Veon Bell in the grand scheme of things.
It's Sean Gilbert held out for an entire season, and gosh, that must be like 20 years ago at this point.
Yeah.
He ended up getting a really good deal the next year. He was traded for two first-round picks right. and got a really good deal, and then was never like a great player. Yeah, but Sean Gilbert was an interesting case of a player.
Yeah.
And other than that, there's not a strong case to be made that you're better. Like, usually the risk-reward is take that big pile of guaranteed money this season. Unless you get injured drastically or something, you're probably going to get a huge pile of money next season.
Yeah. Yeah. Who did Sean Gilbert was with the Rams, and then
the Panthers?
They traded. Well, he went Rams to the Redskins.
Right. Yeah.
And then he had the contract dispute with the Redskins, and then he went to the Panthers. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, he went to the Panthers. So, he was never really, at least statistically, I'm just looking at his numbers. He was never super impactful ever again, really.
Yeah, he was an interesting dude. I remember hearing stories about him. It's just like he was very, sometimes I mix people up here, but I remember talking to somebody from the Redskins that said like Sean Gilbert was very astute financially, like really understood numbers really well and everything. And I think like in his mind, it wasn't just some ego and pride driven thing to hold out that entire year. Mm-hmm. He calculated it and he figured that was his best thing to do.
Yeah.
And you're right. Yeah. And he never ended up, he got like 15 sacks over the next five seasons with Carolina.
Yeah. I would say Carolina probably not happy with that transaction, giving up two first round picks and then paying a guy. All right. What are the odds? We're going to talk to Darren Revelle at the bottom of the hour. He, of course, is our Action Network expert, but also the business of sports. But Seth, I found a gambling website out there that will calculate the odds on a marriage lasting. I'm going to answer 20 questions, and then the gambling algorithm will tell us the odds that my marriage to Amy lasts. We'll do that next.
Oh, okay.
Seth, mybookie.ag has created a fun little website where they will, based on answers to yes, no, and some quantitative questions, they have a divorce odds calculator. So they take your answers. There's probably about 30 questions on here. I'm not going to hit all of them just for the sake of time. But of the two of us, I'm the one most recently married. And it's my second marriage. So I think this is probably a healthy exercise for me to go through here.
By just the strict odds, like with no other input whatsoever, you probably got a 50% chance of making it, right?
Yeah, I would. Yeah, I think that's probably the baseline, I would say.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of questions in here, and depending on your answers, the algorithm spits out odds at the end on whether or not I am going to get divorced. So let's go through some of them. We can't go through all of them just for the sake of time.
Yeah,
but these are quick ones. You know, what has your partner said more of during 2020? Oh, by the way, that's the spirit of this too. Is that in China they've seen a spike in the divorce rate because that's where the coronavirus initiated, and so that's where you saw a lot of people hunkering down and quarantining with their significant other early on. And it turns out that people, when they're forced to be with their significant other for 24 hours a day, it turns out they don't like them very much.
Right, right. Yeah.
Go figure.
Sometimes you can, you know what? Sometimes in a relationship, the perfect amount of time with each other is like 4 hours a day, and it's perfect with that.
Yeah.
But when all of a sudden you turned it to 24, it's a whole different scenario.
Yeah. So what has your partner said more of during 2020? I love you or I hate you.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it's pretty easy to figure out where some of these questions are going.
Yeah,
with the divorce meter.
Right, right, right. Has your partner electronically flirted with others during the lockdown? I don't think she has. I'm pretty sure she has not. But I don't know how I would know. I'm just really trusting her with that.
Yeah, I don't know either. I don't think that they ask if you're how many exes does your partner keep in contact with on social media?
I put one or two only because I think, Seth, to use your term, I think it's a non-zero number. And I don't mean like DMing, sliding into DMs. I mean like friends on Facebook kind of thing. Likes the occasional Facebook picture or something
Not like, well, you're like, well, she has to watch the Lakers. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like she's got a team full of guys that she's been with that she still keeps up with or anything.
Right, right. Or like, I wonder why she's such a fan of the offensive line of the Texans. Why is that?
Yeah.
do you know the password of your partner's phone? I do not.
Oh, I do.
You do?
I do. Yeah.
You know Brandy's password on her phone.
Yeah,
right?
I do. I almost blurted it out, but that would be dumb now, wouldn't it? To tell the whole world. Is that considered a good thing or a bad thing? Does this test think I'm paranoid for knowing her password?
I would guess it would look at it as a good thing, that there's a trust level.
Unless
you swiped it.
Sean, if she doesn't tell me her password, mm-hmm. then nobody in the relationship is going to know her password.
Right.
Okay? It's up to me. I'm like I'm the vault that keeps the passwords organized in our family.
Yeah, you're the guy.
And she at any time, probably about 7 to 8 times per day, she texts me asking me what the password is to something of hers.
Yeah.
So
Let's see. Has your partner cheated with others during the lockdown? No, she hasn't cheated with others during the lockdown. Did you take advantage of the free Pornhub premium coronavirus offer? I didn't even know there was one. But I feel like I wouldn't take advantage of that. That feels like going from, just puffing and maybe inhaling a little bit of weed to just freebasing and doing meth and things like that.
It feels like more of a time commitment than I'm willing to use that
right.
service for anyway. And not to mention, it's anytime I give my email address over to anybody or anything or a website especially, I don't know if I want to give my email address over to Pornhub.
Some of these questions are really uncomfortable. Wow. How many times a week do you quietly pleasure yourself in another room? And I answered zero. There's nothing quiet about it.
Once he got his hands on you, you weren't getting off.
That's good.
Zero is the answer. Do you and your partner have children? No, not together. We don't. Does your partner treat the toothpaste tube with enough respect? Yes. Does your partner has she started binge watching shows you hate? I don't know about hate, but she binge watches a lot of shows I'm just not interested in.
Yeah, I wonder though, that one I don't feel like that should be an indicator, because if you've got a healthy relationship, and especially if you're trapped together all this time during the pandemic, then that's going to happen and you're probably cool to just let them do what they're going to do, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think that always having the same shows in common is always the best thing. Does your partner engage in internet battles with strangers on Facebook, Sean?
I don't know about strangers, but she does duke it out. Not like heavy, heavy political stuff, but Amy will take exception from time to time with some things on there.
And she won't just seethe about it quietly. She'll let him know.
Not like totally heavy handed. I don't know if it's enough to do, because I think a yes, that I think what they're looking for with a yes are people that are just, you know the types. You know what I mean? They're just everything
combative.
Gets politicized and
yeah.
So I'm gonna put a soft yes on there. She's probably listening to this right now going, thanks a lot, dude.
I feel like this test says that makes you more likely to get divorced, but I think that depends on what your relationship dynamics are.
Right, right.
If you're both a couple of very political people and you're fighting the same fight, I would imagine.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't know. Like, I can't. I got enough stress in my life. I don't need Brandy getting all riled up about political stuff on social media.
No.
That'd be a deal breaker.
Does your partner bathe themselves less than before the coronavirus was released into the world? I think we can see that the answer is no. She bathes plenty. Have you secretly or openly wished the Rona upon your significant? No, I have not. Only to maybe get the antibodies. That's it.
Was that? It was for good purposes.
Right, right.
It wasn't. What you looking at me for? Like I'm the criminal.
Right.
This is. I was trying to do something nice for her when I sent her into that sketchy environment.
Has your partner picked up a drug habit in 2020? Yeah, she likes to snort herself a whole lot of Sean, is what she's addicted to. Let's see. Do you and your partner have a difference of opinion in how the coronavirus was started? God, I would hate to be in a relationship where there was an open opinion, like where you even debated how it's. Who cares? It's here. Wet markets, by the way. Are both of you artists? Always breaking up with each other and sleeping around. Do artists get a reputation for doing that? Is that a thing with artists?
I don't know. I guess at least male artists. I think that's a thing with like male artists and musicians. It's probably just more of a bohemian lifestyle, you know?
Yeah, I got you.
Just sort of free flowing and free loving, and all those ripping and grinding and tearing, all that.
On a scale, it's interesting to look at these questions from your partner's perspective, because on a scale of 1 to 10, how happy are you with the way your partner spends their Sundays between September and January each year? And I give Amy a 10. You know, she's either at home watching football or she's at the stadium watching football. She would probably answer, I do not see him on Sundays. Because that's, generally speaking, that's true. Because
right, but the question is she cool with that? Right?
Yeah. Well, no. The question is, am I cool with what she's doing? But I'm saying, looking at it from her perspective,
yeah.
I wonder what a lot of these, Seth, I'm reading them. I go, I wonder what Amy's answer would be to these questions.
Yeah.
Like, what is it? What's her divorce rate going to spit? What's the algorithm going to spit out for her? Is it going to be
right.
the same? Yeah.
Yeah. I think that probably most guys doing this, especially because there's ones about like, okay, how much of the cooking do you help out with? How much of the dishes do you help with? So probably more, it feels like more guys would be graded harshly on this, like, as the cause for a divorce than most women would.
100% in our house. Like, she scored big in the you know, the kitchen arts, I'll call it.
Yeah, it sounds like this might have been a bad exercise for you, just in that you might feel less confident that she's not going to leave you.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what it spits out. There's a few more questions here. Do you have a do you have a semi-attractive live-in maid, nanny, or butler? No, but I'm willing
those.
To hire one. Have you and your partner tried new sexual activities during the lockdown? I'm going to just answer
you
that
know
one.
I'm not a swing doctor or anything.
Here on the, did any of your partner's relatives move in with you during 2020?
Yeah, that's a cause of stress right there.
Yeah, that's a low-key, well, not even low-key. It's one you don't think about a lot. I think a lot of times, Seth, when people think about stress in a relationship, they think about all the interpersonal stuff and the tasks within the home. You start injecting that variable of other people into the mix, and the answer is no for us. We live by ourselves. So, let's see. This is the big one here. If you had to choose between sports returning or saving your marriage, which would it be? It's a big swing right there. Here's the thing. Let's see here.
If sports don't return, you're going to have to find a new job.
Yeah.
And then that would be tough on your marriage.
It would. So, and Amy, if you're listening right now, don't take this the wrong way, please. We went 9 years living together without being married. So technically, we were dating / friends for a very, very long time. We have learned to thrive without actually literally being married. And I feel like Amy and I are cordial enough human beings where if something were to go awry with the marriage, that we would remain friends. If sports doesn't return, I am back to selling phone systems. That cannot
Plus,
be.
Sean, how old are you now?
I'm 51 years old.
You're 51? Oh, my gosh. I was just reading. Okay, this is comedian Nick Griffin. I just heard him yesterday. He was talking about dating at the age of 51.
Yeah.
And he's like, what am I going to tell the woman? Like, I can't live without you. I've lived 51 years without you. And most of them were pretty damn good. So I feel like, yeah, there's a little bit with Amy right now where you're going to say, hey, I love what we have. But I will point out.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Right. It's. Here's the thing. It's the answer to that question is not about you, babe. It's about what would happen if sports didn't come back. It's not that I don't love you more than sports. It's that without sports, I don't know how much longer I would want to exist because I love what I do for this job. All right. So, Seth, I just hit the algorithm. Do you think that the favorite
is yes for me getting divorced or no for me getting divorced?
I think it's no for you getting divorced, yep. But I'm going to say that the odds are probably going to surprise you and not be as in favor of you not getting divorced as you might think.
60% chance I remain married. There is a 40% chance that I am getting divorced. So that's pretty good.
That's weird. I went through and I tried to... Oh, I see. All right, I read it. No. This isn't it. I went through and I tried to answer with all the questions that I assumed would be most likely to be like, oh, yeah, your marriage is solid.
Yeah.
Which, of course, were this exact same as my normal answers.
Right.
But, and it only gave me a 57% chance of no divorce.
Interesting.
Maybe you could tell I was a liar.
Amy did.
Because I was going through and giving disingenuous answers.
So a 57% chance I was getting divorced or that I was staying in my marriage?
For me, when I took it, it was 57% chance that I would be staying married.
Okay. And I'm at 60. Yeah. Amy texted me. She is following along and did this. And she came out, same as you, 57% chance we remain married. So slightly less. Amy's a little more.
It's kind of like when somebody's heavily favored to win a championship and you see the odds and you realize like, oh, wow, that's not as convincing a favorite as I thought. That's how I feel about my marriage right now.
Yeah.
It's not as convincing a favorite as I thought.
That's right. Yeah, it's good. It's a good reminder, Seth, to remind your P's and Q's.
Hey, I've got an idea, business idea.
Yeah.
Can you buy insurance for your marriage? Like secretly... Like go off somewhere like before you get married and buy insurance as to if you end up getting divorced, like costs for legal fees and what have you.
I don't know. Boy, that could be a niche.
It'd have to be very discreet.
If there are any divorce lawyers listening to it, because I feel like there's got to be a divorce lawyer that has done the math on that sort of thing, or maybe been involved in a marriage that did the math on that sort of thing. Text in 713-572-4610.
It would be too easy to cheat the system, I think. It'd be too easy to find somebody who's like, hey, I'm going to buy marriage insurance for $50,000. Well, how about you and I pretend we're married for 2 years and then get divorced?
Right. It's one thing to try to bilk life insurance. That's you're pot committed at that point. But bilking marriage insurance would be...
It would be this decade's green card scam.
Yes.
Right? Where you're like, okay, instead of marrying somebody to get a green card, we're marrying to get the marriage insurance.
Does Darren Revelle trust Ballpark Sushi? That's next. Sean Pendergast, Seth Payne with you on a Thursday. Thursday, 9:35. It's time to talk to our good friend. He's on the hotline right now. Action Network. Download the free Action Network app for when sports get back. You will absolutely want that. And the website, actionnetwork.com. Tons of great content there, including content from our guest, Darren Revelle, joining us here on Sports Radio 610. So, Darren, the question that is on everybody's mind on this show over the last hour: does Darren Revelle trust Ballpark Sushi?
It depends on where you are.
Okay.
I trust it in New York, where the Mets, the official sushi place is Daruma, which is where I grew up eating my sushi. Went there for the first time in 1988 before sushi was hot. And my family was such good customers, we were invited as one of 15 families to like the Christmas party where they had free sushi. And as like a 12-year-old, I ate like an entire boat and got a stomachache. Tangent. I trust it in Seattle and San Francisco. You know, the thing about sushi is I've never gotten sick on sushi, and I'm to the point of eating so much sushi that I'm probably going to die of mercury poisoning. I've never gotten sick on sushi. I think people think about that. Now, gas station sushi, maybe not. But, like, if you go to Newark Airport, there's a sushi place there. It's called Tsujiki Market or something like that. They literally are taking the sushi, the fish, from the market in Japan, putting it in the cargo hold of a United plane, and flying it with the people that are going from Japan to New Jersey. And so literally you could eat the fish like 48 hours after it was sold.
Oh.
So people say, oh, airport sushi. I would never eat that. It's actually amazing.
Yeah.
You know what?
The sushi's fresher than your sushi place.
Yeah.
I, I, I feel like I, you know what, you actually created the perfect segue into the question I want to ask you, which is that like in sushi or in eating raw oyster, there's a certain level of risk that the customer takes on. If a customer orders anything raw, they know there's a chance that they could get sick from it, and it's not necessarily the restaurant's fault unless there's gross negligence, which leads us to the question of, okay, looks like NFL teams are probably, or there's a good chance they're going to ask fans to sign waivers, COVID waivers, before they go in. Is there anything we should make of that? Do you think fans will balk at that?
I don't think so. I mean, I think it's like you're assuming the risk anyway. It's clear you're assuming the risk. There's some people, I got in a debate on Twitter yesterday with a lawyer who said that even though the ticket on the back assumes injury pretty much from like a ball or something with crowds, a physical injury, he thinks it covers it. I don't necessarily think, because it's an illness. So I'm not sure that fans, that teams would be assured that that actually makes any sense. But if you're going to balk at it, like, I mean, you obviously know the risk. I guess, do people walk up to a sushi counter and when they see the warning saying, this is raw, which might give you a foodborne illness, they go, oh, man, that could happen? Like, it's the same thing. Does anyone back out when they're sitting down at the sushi bar and they see that sign that you possibly could get a tapeworm because, you know, it's raw? I don't think so.
Yeah, unless, like, if I go to a Texans game this year, let's suppose they allow 25% in. Unless Cal McNair is COVID positive and comes up and intentionally coughs in my face or something, I'm not going to hold the Texans responsible for crap. Like, am I going to go into a courtroom somewhere and be like, well, golly, I had no idea about this here COVID thing? Of course I know at that point. I think, get out of here with your frivolous lawsuits.
Hold up. You know, there are plenty of people who will intentionally spill coffee on their crotch to sue 7-Eleven or the gas station. Like, you're just not that guy. That guy exists, and that guy will show up to a Texans game.
He will be there.
Probably so. Well, hey, Darren, speaking of the Texans, we're talking to Darren Revelle, Action Network. You tweeted this a couple of days ago, right about the time that my wife was getting the email about her season tickets with the Texans, that the Jets, Texans, and Bears a couple of days ago offered refunds to season ticket holders who wish to skip the 2020 season. They had a couple options in there, full refund. They had, we applied her money she'd paid so far to next season because we know, you know, we're going to keep the tickets, that kind of thing. I'm curious what
your... Why are they specifically her tickets?
Because she had them before we got married in February. So, yeah, she's had those tickets longer than she's had me. And I also cover the game, so I never sit in the seats.
Well, know? I knew that. I knew that part, but it's okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. So that it's almost like a Packers thing where the Packers, like, in the case of divorce, the Packers have like a whole ruling and how it would work and this and that.
To be very clear on one thing, Darren, she listens to the show. If I referred to them as our tickets a little too frequently, she would remind me and show me her credit card statement as to exactly whose bank account the money for the tickets thus far.
Okay. Yeah. Luckily, my wife doesn't listen to anything I do, so I could say anything.
That's right. So, so you tweeted about the Jets, Texans, and Bears doing this, offering these refunds. What are we to read into? Is this just good customer service? Is this them maybe trying to prepare for smaller crowds? How did you read into this?
I think it's them trying to eliminate who wants to be eliminated, that it is actually helpful to know who doesn't want to come as we try to figure out the process. Now, the Patriots, I think, were first, but they had this whole disclaimer, like, if you are elderly or compromised in some way. And then this is obviously a blanket, like, if you don't want to show up. I think that this is all about saying, who can we eliminate now so that if we get to a 25%, 35, 50% scenario, what seats can we potentially not resell, but block off? And how will that help? And if we're going to shift people, how would that look? So I think it's kind of, although I applaud it and I think it's the right move, I think it's also for selfish reasons from a team standpoint.
Darren, here on Payne and Pendergast, our favorite baseball team that's currently playing is the Doosan Bears of the Korean League. We are diehard. We've been lifelong fans of the Doosan Bears for at least 6 weeks. And they were at least a part of a mistake made by a casino that was allowing people to place wagers on Korean baseball games after the games had already started. And so the Doosan Bears didn't do anything wrong. It was just, this is one of the games that people exploited.
You want to make that clear.
Yes. They had nothing to do. There was no trash cans involved or anything else. This is right. What does a casino do in this instance? Are these good people who had the eye and the response time to take advantage of this error? Are they going to get to keep their winnings, or is this is this kind of like finding money at an ATM?
So that is obviously a question. This has happened before, where there was actually a glitch in the odds at FanDuel in the Meadowlands. Someone took advantage of it. And then, you know, usually what happens is the gaming authorities get involved. So this is what happened. So it was a 10-game Korean baseball parlay, okay? It was $250 this person risked and won $137,000. So it's a humongous parlay here. And it happened at MGM. An MGM book in Vegas, and when the parlay was placed, there were games already in progress that it should not, the computer system should have rejected the bet. I don't know why it didn't, but the question becomes, is it on their internal software, MGM, or is it something else? And you know, each situation is different. The Gaming Control Board in Nevada is involved, but if you're that guy, what do you say? Well, I didn't know.
Right.
Like, I didn't know the games were going on. Like, I wrote these down. Right?
That's where, because one of the wagers was that he took an over of 9.5 between these two teams. Right. The one team opened up with 5 runs in the first inning.
Right.
They had 7 runs within the first 2 innings, and he put the bet over while they had 7 runs already.
But here's the thing, though. Do you have to have some inside information? Like, why would I ever go up to the counter and think I could get away with a bet of a game that started?
Oh, yeah.
Especially with 250
bucks. Would you ever walk up to the counter on a game and try to get a number that's not a live number?
No.
When a game has started? No. That's what I don't understand. Like, did a ticket taker say, hey, you know, Korean baseball's hot, but we really haven't figured out the internal workings of it. So, hey, you know, that's what I don't understand. Like, there'd be no reason to try to get the bet in.
Yeah. Darren Revelle, Action Network, joining us. Darren, is this going to be the most wagered upon Nathan's hot dog eating contest in the history of the contest?
Absolutely, but it's also the most confusing as to how you bet.
Explain.
Very, very difficult. Well, yesterday I learned that not only was it not going to be at the corner of Surf and Stillwell in Coney Island where the Nathan's is, that it was going to be inside, which I'm not sure how that works with COVID-19 and how that's the best scenario, but it will be socially distanced inside. There will only be 6 women competing and 5 men competing. So you have, and having been to the hot dog eating contest for more years than probably anyone other than the Shea brothers who put it on, it is usually 95, 100 degrees with 100% humidity.
Yeah, it's miserable.
One year when I was dressed in a suit, I think my suit actually disintegrated. It was so disgusting. But I remember how hot it was. And that is a impediment to being the best eater you could be.
Yeah.
So if it's in an air-conditioned place, like that's why when I'm looking at these odds and I'm like, wait, the woman champion, Miki Sudo, the most she's ever eaten is 35 and the over-under's 40.
Like, that's why.
You know, what are they accounting for? These people aren't even in mid-season form. And now Chestnut's an interesting one. His record is 74, and they have it at 72.5, 72, depending on what book you get it at.
Over.
I love talking about this, seriously.
Over.
But he doesn't – so on the flip side, it's like, okay, well, you got the air condition, you got fewer contestants, but then you have no crowd.
Yeah. Oh, where the adrenaline gets going and everybody's cheering. I know – I've heard
right.
Joey talk
and,
about that
and,
before.
And maybe the guy who'd push Chestnut more than anyone could be Matt Stoney, who's the only guy in the last 13 years who's beaten him, and he got stuck in California when Cuomo in New York, the governor, said, "Hey, we're not letting people in." So he's now out.
Stoney's out. Okay,
DNE did not eat.
Wow,
COVID-19
did not eat. Well, Darren, you remember 2 years ago when there was a controversy with the count?
Oh,
on
I remember.
Darren, I was a judge that year, judging the eater right next to Joey. So I was witness to this whole thing
as it was
unfolding. It was incredible watching Joey. The look on Joey's face when he saw how badly the count was getting screwed up afterwards. And I'm and like you being immersed in the gambling world, my immediate thought as I'm sitting there was, holy crap, there are books that are going to be paying out on the under right now, and they should be paying out on the over for him.
Yeah, hey, it's gotten a whole lot more serious since 2002 when I brought the contest to ESPN. Don't believe me? Read the book Horsemen of the Esophagus. It's true.
Yeah.
You take credit for bringing the eating contest to ESPN the same way that
go ahead.
I was going to say that's now taking credit for the decision with LeBron James.
Oh, listen, it is clear that, in 2001, we had a thing called Most Sent Stories on ESPN.com. And the most sent story in 2001 was Takeru Kobayashi wins the hot dog eating contest, which was an AP story not written by, it wasn't like a unique story. So I'm like, we got to cover this. And then the next year we covered it and I went there. And the next year I'm like, listen, the rights to this are basically zero. Let's broadcast it. And kind of the rest is history. But I'm just saying, if anyone questions me, like I get questioned all day long on any claim of anything I've ever done, because no one believes me, go read the book Horsemen of the Esophagus by Jason Fagone, and you'll see the paragraph that will say, when a young enterprising business reporter came to the ESPN executives and offered the deal.
That's great.
That's one of the best titles for a book I've ever heard.
Horseman of the Esophagus.
Yeah, I'm going to have to go get it. Based on the merits of the title alone.
I also like to use the word instead of throwing up. If an eater suffers an urge contrary to swallowing.
Oh, I thought you were going to say a reversal of fortune. Don't they use that
as
well?
Yeah,
yeah. So Darren, then, if you've been witness to many of these hot dog eating contests, as you mentioned, when you said Joey's number was 72, he did 74, I want to say, last year. To me, I think having been down in that pit like you talked about, where it's just brutally hot and humid, to me...
Yeah, I take the over.
I would too. To me, the conditions of the AC and it being 68 degrees in the room far outweighs whatever adrenaline rush you get from people screaming your name.
Do you know what my dream is? My dream is to place a bet so big on the hot dog eating contest that they limit me.
What do you think that would be? What would be, because it's different for different activities/sports.
Given that DraftKings is now a sponsor of it would be really horrible publicity.
Yeah.
If they limited me. So if they knew it was me, I think that's two different questions. So,
yeah.
But I don't think they'd let you get down more than $1,000.
Okay. Yeah. Darren Revelle.
Let me know if I'm in New Jersey. If you want to put something down.
I'll give you a shout. I've got ways of doing it, Darren. I'm going to go find the best number.
I'll
double check with you. Darren, Seth and I are on vacation next week, so we won't talk to you for a couple weeks. But we appreciate the time as always. It's always a pleasure. I hope
things get a whole lot better in our country and in Texas over the next couple weeks.
Thank you. Us too, for sure. Darren Revelle, Action Network. Darren, we appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay, take care.
All right, take care. Darren Revelle joining us on the show. He says, take the over, Seth.
Take the over even on those big numbers just because of the weather.
Dude, 72 and a half hot dogs in 10 minutes.
But the weather makes a, you know, heat obviously affects most athletic events.
Right.
But anything that involves endurance or anything, you're not as good in the heat. And I just never thought of it as miserable as it looks at those Coney Island things. Because it does look hot. Like, everybody looks miserable. There's no shade or anything, right? That sun in your face as you're eating and probably sweating a whole bunch just from already eating. I can see how that would make a difference.
There's no shade, and it is packed. Like, it's packed in the crowd. It's packed at the corner of Surf and Stillwell. It's packed down in the pit with the judges. Like, it is a mass of humanity with no shade.
Yeah, so in a time of COVID, you'd have that rare instance where the actual gathering itself was less healthy than the 350-pound guy shoving 100 hot dogs into his mouth in 10 minutes.
Okay. Someone may die of something other than just gorging on hot dogs at this
time. You're like, somebody's going to die.
Right.
Is it one of those 24 people for sure?
That's
no,
right.
Somebody else altogether.
All right, Seth, we are about out of time. I will talk to you in a couple of weeks, my friend.
Yeah, antibodies to you. I'll probably be all oiled up and tan when I come back.
Good deal.
With a six pack.
Can't wait to see it. Good stuff. All right, antibodies to you as well. Antibodies to all of you. A very happy next week and a half for me, a couple of weeks for Seth. And you got a variety of pinch hitters in for us over the next several days, all of whom will be entertaining and good. We appreciate you tuning in. Stay safe out there. Happy 4th of July weekend, everybody. See you in a couple weeks.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.